Welcome to the Successful Athletes Podcast presented by Trainer Road, where we interview successful athletes to make you a faster cyclist. This week, we're joined out of Vancouver, BC in Canada with Connor Wilson. How's it going, Connor?
Good. Good to be on.
Yeah, I'm excited, Dad. Thanks for reaching out. You did that at trainerroad.com/SAP. That's where all of you listening to this can share your story with me as well. And I would love to share it with the listeners that we have here about how Trainer Road has helped make you faster. And Connor, I'm not going to bury the lead. I'm just going to tell everybody, I'm going to spoil the whole thing, and then we're going to go into the details. So you're an ex-ski racer, gone road racer for now, but you've also done some mountain biking, and you found success really rapidly in terms of improvements in fitness, but also in terms of race results too. And you're now prepping for your first season, hopefully competing with Cat 1s and Cat 2s. It's super impressive. You've gone from 340 watts to 384 watts with your FTP. And then we'll get into all the different things with Watt KG and how you've done that improvement and everything else. But my main question is, what have your life circumstances been like over the past 2 years to allow yourself to train and to go through this, like, because, geez, 2 years ago, basically, that you got into cycling. So what is your life situation like? And then we're going to get into how you fit training in.
Yeah, so I'd say over the past 2 years, just kind of integrating what COVID has impacted wise for my life. I think with work, it's been busy. I'm in consulting, so it's very demanding work wise, but I've found a way, I think, with living at home, not having to go into the office, it allowed me to kind of like catapult what I wanted to do bike wise really quickly. I think it started off as just a total hobby when I kind of got into mountain biking while I was at university as sort of just a fun thing to be doing between classes, maybe two or three times a week. And then got on a road bike, I think that summer, I think it was like a 2001, like Argonne 18. One of my best friends decided that morning, I guess, at 3 a.m. at the bar that we were going to bike home from my friend's cottage, which was like a 150 kilometer ride southward. And at that point, looking back, it's pretty funny because we had no idea like how to plan a route. We had no idea how to bring the right nutrition, water, anything. So we each had one water bottle and a couple of Nutri-Grain bars and just went for it along the highway. And we did it, and we just collapsed at the on the lawn when we arrived. But thinking back to that, it's kind of crazy where things have gone just in terms of like doing rides like that more often and it being so much easier now, fueling, which I'm sure we'll get into. But yeah, I think generally just with work, taking that hobby that I was interested in, I started realizing that I could be fast on the bike, which is just one element of kind of biking to me. But taking that and then integrating kind of trying to figure out how to get faster. And that's where Trainer Road started to come in a little later.
So you were a ski racer before this. For how many years did you race? And also at what level were you racing at?
Yeah. So I started ski racing when I had skis on my feet when I was two. I was the youngest of four and they were all already racing. And I was kind of the last one, a bit of a gap between the third to me. And so I was always just trying to follow in their footsteps. And then from two to probably 22, I started kind of racing very competitively. I went to a school called National Ski Academy in Ontario for high school. So we basically would ski all day throughout the winter and then just do school at night. So a big focus on athletics, but also school. And then graduated and went on to the Ontario Ski Team, which is just kind of the provincial team, and took it from there. I think the biggest thing I got from that ended up helping with bikes was really, I think, the base level, like dry land training that we were doing all the time. But even thinking back at it, like I was good at skiing because I was good at skiing, not because I was strong. At least in my mind, I could never really put on weight, which is pretty key when you're going downhill. But yeah, we always slacked off when it came to dry land training. And to think now, like what me and all my friends are doing with bikes, I'm so obsessed with like the fitness side of it. It's kind of funny where back in the day we would go for bike rides for dry land and we would skip out on the route and jump into our friend's house and just like hang out. And then skip out when the group came back, we would join up with like the Peloton, we'll call it, so they wouldn't tell when we even left. So yeah, ski racing definitely played a big part, but in just getting into biking, I think, as a backdrop.
Mm. So the ski racers typically tend to be broad in terms of broad shouldered, even like wide hips, that gives them a good like center and base of control. They tend to be very strong throughout their entire body, particularly through the trunk. Right. Mm-hmm. And you have incredible leg strength as well because of the fact of what you're dealing with ski racing. Right.
Yeah.
Did you fit into that? Were you a Darren Rolfs or a Bodie Miller or anything like this? Was that your body type?
I was going to say no. That was not my body type. I think ski racing is interesting in that I think there's that body type that's really good for like downhill skiing, for example. But other than that, I think there's so many different body types that can succeed at the sport. I was really tall and lanky. And so for like more shorter disciplines like slalom, could really just throw your feet around the gates and keep your center of gravity in the middle. Whereas for anything more downhill or super G, the really fast events that someone like Bodie Miller would excel at, I wasn't going through those races. That wasn't for me.
Sure. No. So in this respect, you were a skier. You didn't put a whole lot of focus into dry land training, anything else. But then you found cycling. You talked about that moment with your friend and going on that crazy adventure. And then it kind of clicks for you. When did you, was it after that long ride with your friend, the ill-fated ride that you did, that ended up making you say, I want to do this regularly? What was the catalyzing moment that made you say, I want to be a cyclist instead of just, I ride my bike every once in a while?
Yeah, I think it definitely wasn't that moment. That moment I was like, I don't want to be a road bike again the first of the year. But just on the mountain bike that year, just having fun with it, I would like look at the Strava segments and I'd see, just try to beat my own time. And I've always been really competitive. And I think that was a big driver in my skiing. And that came along really quickly where I was looking at these segments and I was like, oh, I can beat my time by X amount. Or like, I remember thinking like, oh, a seventh on this one segment. Like, that's crazy. Out of like 1,000 people that have done it. So I think that was sort of the base of tying in the competitiveness to it. And then moving into the following year. So that was 2019. Over 2019 winter, I think I got on a trainer once. My dad just had one. I tried it out. And again, I was like, wow, this is like I'm in some weird place in Italy on the screen and this just feels brutal. but still wasn't really feeling it. And then right as COVID was hitting in March 2020, I bought a road bike because I decided that I wanted to get into it a little bit more, just pure interest. And that's when I started doing more road rides. I remember like my first one was around 70 kilometers and just felt like a hero. Like it was a massive ride and just felt so good. And then from there, it just kept laddering onto each other. And in 2020, I think that's when I realized that this was sort of becoming a bit of an obsession per se. And I think it just feels so good. You feel free, you feel kind of adventurous. And I think through COVID too, when you're working so hard, at least for me, like I think we all start working even more because you're at home, it's easier to go on your computer and log on. I think that was a really good outlet where you just sort of let go. And then that's when I started realizing that I loved biking and that I was decently good at it. And then that's when moving into the off season after 2020, off season, I'll call it, when it was just a season of riding bikes for fun, that I decided I wanted to see how I could get faster through the off season on a trainer. And that's when I started trying out different apps and stuff. So all the names that we maybe won't mention on this podcast, but I tried all of them. And then I tried Trainer Road and I realized that if what I was trying to do was get faster, the Trainer Road was going to be the best way to do it. It just felt like every minute I spent on the bike in the basement in the dark, where it's not a very fun place to be, it felt like every minute I was spending down there on Trainer Road was worthwhile. Whereas on the other things, it was trying to have fun with it, but I wasn't there to have fun necessarily. I wanted to try and get faster and see what my body could do, which that's when it really turned into, okay, maybe I think I'm fast, but I don't really know anybody. So who knows if I actually am. Let's see what we can do.
Yeah. So looking at 2019, before you used Trainer Road, you did an FTP test of some sort. You came out with 280 watt FTP. You weighed 78 kilograms. So that puts you around 3.6 watts per kilogram. Mm-hmm. In 2020, your first one with Trainer Road, at that point, you'd made significant amount of progress from all the mountain biking and then actually starting to take it more seriously. And you started your Trainer Road journey at 340 watt FTP at 76 kilograms. So 4.5 watts per kilogram, which statistically speaking, you are very much toward the rare air side of things for cyclists, for average cyclists. Now in 2021, 384 watts and 74 kilograms. So that puts you over the 5 watt per kilogram mark. You're at 5.2 watts per kilogram. That's extremely rare air. One that, you know, there's nothing special about your body doesn't know like 5 watts per kilogram. It doesn't bump up against that and struggle getting past. However, getting to that point is really, really tough. Once you get past 4.5 watts per kilogram, it's hard for athletes. So I want to talk to you about what you have done in terms of what training plans you followed, but then also the different things that you have done that you feel make you have helped you be uniquely successful in that short period of time to get from 3.5 to 5, nearly, we're getting closer to 5.5 watts per kilogram. You're inching that way. So first let's talk about what plans you followed and what you've done in that regard. Then we can get into the other details.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So at the very start, I was just kind of dabbling with random workouts. And then I realized that building a plan would be the best option. and so I did that, and I didn't really know when to choose my target date or finish date of that. I chose a rolling road race mid volume. It felt like that was the amount of time I had available. And when you compare the hours per week on Trainer Road to what you're putting out in the summer, for example, the hours seem like really low because when you're outdoors, you get a lot of more hours, I feel like, on the bike that aren't even really, you're just kind of coasting. And so it seemed reasonable. I probably should have started on low realistically, but, and just built up, but medium ended up working out. And then, yeah, I think those workouts, they were hard for sure. Like it was really hard. And then I wasn't committed to the plan right away, just because I didn't know enough about it. But then as I started listening to the podcasts that Trainer Road has, as well as just like reading more, I found that I was doing these workouts and I was hitting them and doing them in the background the whole time. And so I felt like my body was getting stronger. But what was even more important, I felt like, was the amount of knowledge I was building, just trying to learn more about what I was actually doing. Because in order for me to commit to doing that training plan, which was hard every single day, I needed to like know what I was actually doing. So whether it be listening to the podcasts, like a lot of them, just reading various things to try to understand that, I think that really helped. And through the off season, I think injecting some like strength things, whether it be once a week or not, a lot of stretching, which always seems like just kind of weird and not important, but I stopped stretching a bit at the end of the season. And I felt a huge difference. So yeah, I think the training plan was one thing. And if you can hit that and do them as you're supposed to, and then I found the layering on of these other things that I feel Trainer Road offers, as well as just other kind of knowledge based things, I think that really helped.
Yeah. So, let's talk about the fueling side of things in particular here. So if you are riding at 384 watts, your sweet spot workouts, you're burning way over 1,000 calories an hour. That's tough to keep up with. So did your diet have to evolve, and did you get to a point where you kind of like you hit an inflection point where you realized I got to fuel more?
I feel like I've hit an inflection point very quickly when I fueled right the first time. And I was able to just keep doing it. And that was probably, that was more of an outdoor ride where I took that into practice and felt it more, because it just, I could just keep going and keep putting in efforts, and I would get home and I'd feel fine. I'd be able to go for a hike after and do whatever the family wanted to do. Whereas before, I would come home from that 70K ride and just collapse. So I think that was the inflection point. In terms of what I've actually been doing, I would say that my nutrition off the bike has stayed pretty consistent. my girlfriend's always pushing me to just eat more, which helps. I'm not like weighing food or anything yet or at this point, but just always trying to consume a ton of the right things. So just not junk. But on the bike, that's where things I find get really fun, because I feel like I can just eat whatever and put in the carbs. And I don't know if that's necessarily right, but based on what I've heard and what I've read, it feels right. And it helps. So in terms of what I'm having on the bike, drink mix wise, and I'm just doing straight sugar and a bit of lemon juice and pink Himalayan sea salt. I feel like that gets me like the right kind of glucose fructose mix. It's just easier than doing it kind of bit by bit. I've dabbled with the idea of doing maltodextrin. But again, the sugar is just so easy to buy, and then do. So that's what I usually do, like 45 grams in each bottle. I'm not sure exactly how much I'm drinking of that, but a good amount. And then food wise, especially outdoor on the trainer, like I'll usually just do the drink mix. I find that's satisfactory and I can have multiple bottles, whereas outside I don't want to stop. So I usually just do the drink mix. But then eating wise on the bike outside, I try to just eat things that I like and mix it up. So I went through a huge Pop-Tart phase where I was just downing Pop-Tarts, and those have a lot of carbs, in probably the best carb per package that I've seen, actually.
Yeah, they're hard to beat. Rice Krispie treats are another good one, but those ones they're also like more awkward to eat. Like a Pop-Tart's so easy to eat too, you know?
The Pop-Tart's easy to eat if you do it the right way, I find. At the start, I was eating it straight out of like the tinfoil packaging and it crumbles very quickly. But I found the key to be to Ziploc them before the ride. And then you can put like two full packs in a Ziploc and then they don't crumble.
Pro tip. I like it.
Yeah. Pro tip. Yeah. But also pro tip, don't only eat Pop-Tarts for because I can't tell you the last time I had one. I burned myself out of the Pop-Tarts, and then just peanut butter and jam with an emphasis on the jam. That I find is probably my favorite, just cause it tastes the best. And I usually get a few good laughs from people I'm riding with when I'm pulling out my PB&Js, but that's usually my go-to.
Yeah. Well, they laugh until you drop him. And then after that, they don't laugh. So, yeah. So with this rapid progress that you had, you said you followed mid volume plans. And then I think in the summer, you said that you stepped back to low volume plans. So then you can have more time outside on the bike. Is that correct?
Yeah. So throughout the winter, I found my FTP like increased pretty well. I was advancing how I wanted. And then I, like you guys have talked about this before, I kind of hit a plateau where I wasn't seeing as much growth and I actually went down. And I found that really stressed me out a bit, just because I was like, I'm putting in this hard work, but I'm not actually getting stronger per se. Even though I probably was, just in different ways. And so that really kind of baffled me, but then kept going with it. And then when it got to the point where it was maybe April and it was getting nice outside, I was still at that point where I was still lower and any of my FTP tests weren't as high. And so I was like, okay, I really want to keep doing these trainer road workouts because I know that that's how I'm going to get faster, but look at it outside. Like, it's so nice. I just want to go. Mm-hmm. And so I was still in the mid volume at that point and started riding outside just for fun, not doing the workouts, and I kind of felt that angst of I'm not doing the plan. Like, why I've worked so hard at this over the winter, like I need to continue. And so then I figured out the outdoor rides option for the workouts. And that helped me in a huge way. Even if it was just an hour version of any of the workouts, I could go out, get that hour done, whether it be on like a short punchy climb around my neighborhood, or living in Ontario, it's super flat. And so if I could find a really flat block, I could just do my FT or my threshold workouts or sweet spot there, and then go out on an adventure and do whatever I wanted to do afterwards. And so that I found helped really focus on the intervals that I was trying to do in the first hour. But then if I rode like two more hours of just having fun, that was still helping me work towards my goals probably in an even better way.
Yeah, it's like tacking on extra volume, but not volume that's coming at the expense of the important work, right? Like, that's the big thing, is you have important work that you have to prioritize, but then if you can add on more volume to that, then that's a fantastic way to do it. You know, inside, there's tons of ways to do that just by adding on different workouts, extending warmups and cooldowns. Mm. Outside, it kind of just happens by necessity for most people, because you have to commute to where you are going to do your actual intervals or anything else like that. So it can be a good way. Did you notice that that helped you push past that plateau?
I did, yeah. So that at that point, I think it started to kind of go back up. And however, I wasn't testing it actively through the ramp test, because I was like, I just couldn't wrap my head around.
Yeah, for sure. Ramp test.
And then when I came out to BC, I started, there's two very notable climbs here on the road, Seymour and Cypress, both of which are kind of over the 600, 700 meters of vert. So they're lengthy, really good for a 20-minute test, for example. And so that's when I started seeing a notable increase. Once I started riding out here a little bit more, I wasn't doing as many of the outdoor workouts as I was like racing more and doing harder group rides out here. But then when I would race out, eventually probably a month in, I started seeing my numbers go crazy high, comparison to what they were jump wise, which I think was totally respective to the work on Trainer Road, I think.
For sure. Yeah. You lay the groundwork, you get everything in place, and that ends up going higher, but then you need something else many times, that racing intensity, that next level, to be able to really activate all the work that you've done and to get everything out of it. Right.
For sure. And I think the word FTP is so, I feel like it has too much built around it. I think people too focused too much around it, but it is, especially when I started, it was the one thing I really knew about to focus on. I think the other thing that really helped was just goal setting. Like, I knew that I had set a goal right from the start around what I wanted my FTP to be. So when I tested it, it was 340 or whatever it was. I had a new bike that I ordered around the same time that I started on Trainer Road. And so I set out a goal. I was like, okay, this bike is coming in July, or supposed to. I'm going to aim to have an FTP of 380 by the time my new bike comes. And so that helped in a way, because just goal setting wise, every single time I thought about that new bike coming, which was the Lox, obviously it's just exciting, then I would in turn think about the FTP and wanting to work towards my goal more. Otherwise, I think if I had just set the goal and not tied it to something, it would have, I find those types of goals just slip away and don't think about them. But I think because I thought about it, that really helped me in terms of all these extra things that I was working towards that helped me get there.
Yeah. Now, I mean, as of recording this, in November in 2021, now you have the progression levels with adaptive training, which are really cool to watch progress as well. So it's not just, you know, you don't only have FTP as a proxy for improvement, but you have all the little steps along the way. Yeah.
For sure. I'm excited about that. I haven't started my plan for next, like for this year. I have it on the calendar and I see that date approaching. But I listened to your guys' most recent podcast about I think it was the live questions, and it got me weirdly excited about it. So
good. That's the goal. Yeah. Well, cool. I'm excited to see how high you can get with that as well. I want to ask you a question. So you progressed rapidly. Somebody's listening to this that's been stuck at 3 watts per kilogram right now, and they hate you. Like, they're listening to this and just like, this is ridiculous. This guy's some sort of genetic freak. But I do want to ask you, because of the fitness you likely carried from dry land training and skiing and just being active and, you know, racing at the FIS level like you did globally, that's very high level. That's high level athletics that you had to do, despite, you know, skipping out on occasional dry land training. So were you ever slow on a bike, or have you always been fast?
I think it sounds like a relative term. I mean, what is fast, really? I don't know. I would say I've always felt like I'm not fast, probably. Just personally, like in my head about it. And then sometimes I'll go out with people who are known to be fast, and then all of a sudden I feel fast for the day. But then I go back into thinking that I'm not fast, and then working to be faster. I don't know if that's a good thing Probably not.
Yeah, good and bad, right? Like, yeah.
I definitely feel like imposter syndrome sometimes, just because I feel like I've gotten into it pretty late. But then I'm able to keep up with people who have been in it for much longer. So yeah, I would say at the start, I was decently quick.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about racing actually, on that note, because that's when you, like you said, the relative nature of being fast, it's all about being fast compared to other people. Mm-hmm. You haven't had years of racing, on a bike at least. But this year you won provincial, championships, in the 4-5 category, I think it was, right?
Yeah. We gotta add the caveat.
Yeah, so people are probably listening to this and being like, those poor 4-5s lining up against a guy that's 5.2 watts per kilogram, right? But that's just the nature of, that's how it is. You're still new at this sport. So you don't have a lot of experience in that regard. What category are you now, actually?
So as of right now, Cat 3, but we'll see when the podcast airs, but I have a request in right now that I'm hoping to go to 2 or 1-2. We're hoping.
Suspense. So we need to get your Instagram handle so people can get in touch with you to check in to see if it happens. But so you also, though, in that respect, you've had a fast track of development with racing as well. Is there something from ski racing that has made you a good road racer? Are there certain things that you learned or that translate over, or are there certain things that, that you found like commonalities between the two?
Yeah, I think the strategy of it, biking or cycling and skiing are very different in a lot of ways. The one major one is that provincial race was like a 2 or 3 hour race where you have 3 hours to get the best time. Whereas a ski race, each run is probably like 44 seconds or so. So it's a lot different in that regard. But in terms of the strategy and the thinking that goes into it, it's an individual sport most of the time. You're by yourself. At least I was this year. And so I think you have to do a lot of thinking of like, how are you going to approach this race, whether it's a ski race and you're thinking about your line through the course, or whether you're thinking about, okay, if I know the kind of the track for this race on the bike, if when I might attack or when people might attack, when I want to kind of make my move, I think there's a lot of thinking that goes in kind of the night before or even further than that. And then in terms of executing, I think ski racing is very much, you almost kind of like lose yourself in it because it is so fast, and biking is the same for like that 1 or 2 minutes that I feel like really count. Where you are making that move or you're not making the move and you're getting left behind. I feel like you really need to be so focused. So I think that probably helped. And as much as the dry land wasn't always a huge focus, I think there's something there. There's something there where like there was some engine of some sort built during that time that is stuck.
Yeah. Let's dive deeper into the focus side of things really quick. Cause I think that's an interesting point. Like ski racers, so you see them usually before the race is going off and they're visualizing the course. They've memorized the course. And we're talking about memorize the course. They don't just know that after this left turn comes a right turn, but you really have memorized every detail. Yep. It's like a unique ability to be able to isolate yourself from everything else and just focus in. And it's required because of the intensity of the scenario. Yeah. Have you found anything that helps you focus on the bike in particular? Because with cycling, it's you and the gates with ski racing. Yeah. Whereas with cycling, you have you, and then there's possibly even hundreds of other people that are on course with you. Very different.
Yeah. I don't know if there's like one thing. I think the one thing I picked up from ski racing was probably that visualization aspect. So yeah, you would, before the race, you'd spend probably 20 minutes looking at the course before your run that day. So you had the chance to really memorize it and visualize it. Whether you're visualizing the exact hill or whatnot in a cycling event, or just thinking about it in the right way and picturing yourself on what you think it is, I feel like that helps. And most people who haven't done who haven't had that experience, like visualizing in the past, probably wouldn't expect that or push themselves to learn that. But I think for me, knowing that even for that provincial race in the Cap 4-5, the night before, like I kind of knew that there's a chance I could be in the top three. And so I probably visualized like myself winning, because I felt like when I've pictured the next day happening, I could see that happening. And so putting that in my mind, I think allowed me on the day to focus on kind of the task at hand, looking at kind of the other guys that would be up there with me, trying to get an understanding of the field and then executing once you're out there. I mean, you're going so fast no matter what in the moment. I feel like it's just instinct, right?
But the mind's probably, but the mind has been prepared for that instinctual execution, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So even that race, like it was a lap with one kind of notable climb. And each time you're kind of, I mean, as you know, you're kind of watching the group, either you're kind of pulling off the back or you're near the front and you're trying to understand like, okay, is somebody else going to go here? Or like, can I go or should I go? Is it like, should I even follow that? Like there's a lot. The thing I like about like bike racing, I would say, is there's so many things going on in your mind at once. And I feel like what I like lacking a ton of experience for sure in it this year, trying to get that experience by just racing. And also, I mean, on the trainer in the winter, watching just like hours of racing, I think that really helped me. Just, I feel like I've probably watched every single cycling event in 2019 and 2020, over the past winter, which I'm a little worried I don't have enough content now for this time. But I think that definitely helped in terms of advancing just my cycling knowledge. Yeah, somebody gave me the tip of doing that to try and think, to try and like advance, to catch up a little bit. Because yeah, even after this one season of racing, you pick up so much.
Yeah, it's a good way to accelerate your progress on the tactical side for sure, is to just surround yourself and constantly embed your mind within those tactical scenarios that you see unfolding on the road. I want to talk a little bit about visualization, because like you can struggle with visualization a lot of the times, because while you, first of all, you don't know how aspirational to be, like, should I, you know, go through and visualize myself winning? And if that's not a realistic scenario, then in the race, what, you know, how do I handle the disparity between the two?
Yeah.
But then, so like, how do you set your expectations with that? And then I have one other question on visualization, but let's just start with that one. How do you visualize the right thing?
I feel like this year being kind of my main objective this year was just to get Cat 1-2. And I knew, like, you kind of know what the general power profile of everybody in each category is kind of broadly. And so I felt confident after spending the first two or three races, like purely my goal was just to get skills. And there's a weekly crit out here that was really good for that. Lots of crashes usually, but luckily I wasn't in any of them, but just so much opportunity to learn. And so then those visualization wise, like I was, if I would go into a race and I would think, okay, I'm going to try and stay in the pack the whole day and go for the sprint. And so visualizing, I could picture that. I could picture myself like kind of up elbows with people in a tight, uncomfortable situation for somebody who had never been in a race situation like that. But I knew generally what it looked like and could picture that in my mind. There'd be other times where I might say, okay, I'm going to try and attack and see if I can hold it, see if I can get people to come with me. And so thinking, I think, strategy-wise before and then picturing that in your mind helps for sure. And when you're, I think the best thing about this past year was that I wasn't necessarily just like thrown in with the wolves in a sense. And now even speaking with people on like the board of the cycling association where I am locally, who are responsible for deciding if I get upgraded or not, their advice was like, stay in the lower categories, like just learn. And I think that helped a lot.
A lot of people struggle with another aspect of visualization, which is almost like self-sabotage, in the sense that when they're visualizing, suddenly something goes wrong. Like you don't see yourself successfully doing something. Yeah. You see yourself missing the move, or you see yourself blowing up or crashing even. How do you handle that? And does that occur with you when you're visualizing something?
I feel like Yeah, I feel like in a sense, you need to visualize not a result. Because if you visualize a result, that's there's so many variables that will affect that. And this is somebody who doesn't have a ton of like enough experience probably to say this, but I feel like if you're judging every race by your result, you're not going to be happy after 99% of the days, unless you're just destroying the field every day. And so one example of that would be one race that I had. It was a gravel race, and it was my first time in the Cat 3 field, which in this race, you got to race like Cat 1, 2, 3, all went together. And so for me, it was like, oh, this is a huge chance to stick with the top guys because we're all racing together. And to me, my one goal was to stick with those guys, not necessarily to win, but just to stay in the front group. And I did that, made the selections, but then I flatted. And I think you need to just be quick to assess, like, I think in that situation, that goal was a good goal on paper, but then as soon as I flatted, I knew I wasn't going to catch them. And I needed to reassess and think about, okay, what can I learn from this opportunity still? And what can I get out of it? So waiting for the next group and then kind of playing, you have to like reassess almost your goals, I feel like, throughout the race when things go bad. Because if all I cared about was sticking with those guys, it would have been a horrible drive home and I would have felt defeated. But at the end of the day, that race was still a really good learning opportunity, which I think, especially when you're just getting started, which regardless of like power profile or anything, that was the definition of my season where I was like just getting started. So every opportunity was just learning.
That's all. That's a good way to look at it. If I could add one thing too, one thing that I've learned, because growing up as a ski racer, visualization was key. Motocross, same thing. But I found myself particularly with motocross actually having the problem that we spoke about earlier, where I would visualize something going wrong and it would hurt me because then I'd be like, oh gosh, that becomes a fear that I would anticipate. And it wasn't until later on with bike racing that I learned something really helpful with that, which was to, instead of cutting that off when I'm visualizing and something bad happens, to allow that to unfold and then to think about what decisions I made after that. Mm-hmm. And that really helped. It's kind of like what you talked about there, being quick to reassess.
Yeah.
But when I race, even with Cape Epic, I would be thinking about, okay, this climb is going to be coming up here and I'll flat here. And if I flat here, this is exactly how I'm going to adjust. If I don't flat there, this is how I'm going to, it's like you had a lot of contingency plans in place. And instead of barring off negative things, I would explore them enough to find how we would make it turn it around eventually.
I think that's a really good idea. And if you start planning for contingencies in a ski race, I feel like you're kind of screwed.
Yeah, you can't do it in a ski race. You miss a gate, you're done. Your ski's so maybe, off, you're done.
Maybe that's why I missed that that learning opportunity. But I think that totally makes sense for biking, like 100%, because stuff always happens wrong.
Yeah, and like how many times do you miss the break or you miss that? You should have grabbed onto that one rider's wheel. At that point, if you envisioned yourself winning, and that move was crucial, then you, like you said, you feel defeated, but why not explore all the options about how to go through that? Now that means that you end up visualizing quite a lot and thinking about a lot of different things, but you know what, if it's something that you're into, then it really helps for sure.
If you're going to do it, you might as well do it right.
Yeah. Agreed. So you also, this year you won the Mount Seymour Hill Climb, right?
I did. Yeah. That was probably the most notable one.
That's a huge accomplishment. That's a well-known climb. It is like a well-known climb, particularly in your area, but also just regionally and even nationally. Like people know of Mount Seymour. How long is that climb? And then what power did you do for that?
So that, I think it's around 12K. And the race, just for anybody who doesn't know, it's you basically start at the bottom at a little hut and you just start right on the hill. The start is probably the steepest bit. It kind of undulates a bit, but it's pretty steep, getting probably to like 12% in some sections. But it's essentially 12 kilometers, I think around 6 or 7 average.
Wow. Yeah. So, and that's about 7.5 miles, I think, for how long that is. What power did you hold for that? And what was the time?
Yeah, so I averaged, I think, 403 or 405, something like that, watts, over 400. And my time, I think it was just over 36. I was having a conversation with somebody the night before. And they said, oh, like, what time do you think you're going to get? Because everybody here knows what their Seymour time is.
Yeah.
And I was like, if I could break 37, or if I could be in the 37s, like break 38, I'll be stoked. Like that'll be a huge day. I think my previous best was, without going fully at it the whole time, was I think 40, just over 40. And so then this, during the race, you get into that mindset. And it was really fun because everything's moving slower when it's only a hill climb and it's that long. Like you're still out there for a good amount of time, but you can really watch what other people are doing. And it's just one group and it just gets smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And eventually there was just three of us. And there's a bit of kind of gamemanship in the middle where we were sort of all talking to each other and some comments here and there. But yeah, then ended up kind of pulling an attack with maybe 2 kilometers to go and just went as hard as I could to the finish.
And stuck it. What's next for you, Connor? Like what you mentioned that getting to Cat 1 and 2 was a goal. So what are your goals for next year?
Yeah. So I've spent kind of the last couple months trying to figure out if I wanted to be going into next year kind of as an individual again or on a team. So I reached out to a bunch of local elite teams, one of which has kind of tentatively accepted me being on the team next year, which I'm super stoked about. A really good group of guys that are kind of just a bunch of really fast dudes that are also pretty chill and kind of do normal life things. So hoping that works out as long as I get my upgrade. So kind of pushing for that. In terms of goals, I want to just keep learning, honestly. Like being, for me, the biggest part of going on to a team is just to learn from those guys, people that have been in it longer, chatting with them and biking with them, I think will help me huge. And result wise, I think honestly, the idea of just taking what I've learned strength wise and strategy wise over the past couple of years and helping that with a team, that like fires me up way more than an individual win or anything. Cause I know realistically that I'm not going to be like a pro cyclist or anything. Like I'm not going to quit my day job. I'm going to keep kind of grinding on both fronts. But if I can be playing a huge role on a team win like that, that to me is a big goal.
Yeah. That feels really good when you're a part of that larger effort like that. Well, Connor, how can people get in touch with you if they want to follow your racing journey, ask any questions, share appreciation for this episode?
Yeah. So on Strava, it's just Connor Wilson, with 2 L's. And then on Instagram, I'm with a bicycle. So cool. I have my bike account now.
We'll link you down below in the description, whether you're listening to this podcast or watching YouTube, check it out. Excited to see where Connor gets, especially with adaptive training this year. It's going to, geez, he might even break 5.5. That would be pretty sweet, huh? And then also I'm excited to see how your racing goes. So if you're listening to this and you want to share your story of how Trainer Road has helped you achieve some level of success, it doesn't have to be 5 watts per kilogram. Doesn't have to be winning the Mount Seymour Hill climb. It can be whatever you deem a success. I'd love to hear about it. And so would all the listeners here. So please go to trainerroad.com/SAP and share that with us, and go to trainerroad.com and sign up so you can get fast like Connor. I don't know if all of us can get that fast, but we can all get better for sure. So with that said, thanks everybody. And thanks, Connor. We'll chat with you soon.
Yeah. Thank you.